What does innovation sound like? It sounds like the luxury of being in the moment with your customer, client, or patient. It sounds like having the right information right when you need it. It sounds like being at your best for your customers and your business. Thanks to Hyland's intelligent content solutions that improve digital processes, innovators everywhere are able to do their thing better, whatever that thing is. Now, who doesn't like the sound of that? Hyland, for innovators everywhere. Visit Hyland.com.
Into sports.
20 yards out, Urch to shoot, don't shoot! Oh, what a goal for Fabinho! Wow!
And get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him, yeah. No.
Videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what, do we get a slap?
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports, ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your app store and download it now.
The OTB Podcast Network, with Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural, protein-powered chicken bites.
The News Round on Off the Ball.
With Gillette, we don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters.
This is News Talk.
Good evening, Champions League ahead. We'll have Atletico Chelsea on the way. We'll talk to Miguel Delaney around 7:30. Between 8 and 9, an interview which we just recorded and streamed, and will stop a lot of you in your tracks, I think. Emer O'Neill is a lot of things. Teacher, you'll see her on the School Hope. She's parent. She has represented Ireland at basketball and has just suffered the most... it's horrible, vile, racist abuse imaginable. She'll talk to us about that between 8 and 9. Brilliant speaker, really worth an interview, worth hanging around for. Football show is on the way between 9 and 10 as usual. James Richardson is with us, football Italians. James Richardson, if you're of a certain vintage, and talking about, well, the situation at Aston Villa when it comes to fantasy football. And Dan McDonald will be with us too, also on the News Round. Evening, Dan.
Evening, Joe.
Richie McCormick, hello.
Do you know what, Joe? Regarding James Richardson and Football Italia, I found in my everlasting quest to find something to watch on YouTube, which I've nearly reached the bottom of at this stage, I found a guy's channel on YouTube by the name of Ross Howard, and he has uploaded, like, I'm talking about a stream of matches of the Channel 4 broadcast in full from the early to mid-90s, including the James Richardson bits in between, and I'm in absolute 90s kid paradise on this channel at the moment. So it'd be nice to hear from James himself on the show this evening. Ross Howard, if you're looking for the guy on YouTube. Just an immense channel, immense stuff altogether.
Okay, very good. Well, look, we need content right now.
Absolutely, we do. Absolutely. Because level 5 restrictions are ongoing, and it looks like nothing's going to happen at all if the government are to be believed, or at least their current document is.
Dan McDonald, I think James Richardson primarily, I mean, I'm sure we'll ask him about the Milan derby, but we'll be talking about the situation at Aston Villa, where they all seem to have Jack Grealish in their fantasy football team, so when they knew Jack wasn't playing, they dumped him out of the team, and everybody, so, you know, the pattern emerged, and word was therefore released that, geez, Grealish is injured if all the Villa lads are dumping him out of their fantasy team.
Yeah, I mean, this is like worrying news for journalism, you know, in the sense that already you have the low of going off Instagram stories and updates for, you know, any sliver of information about, say, like Declan Rice's international future or something like that. You know, he once probably liked a picture of a shamrock or something, and, like, you know, it was a reason to be encouraged. But now do we all have to, like, source fantasy football? You know, I get into fantasy football leagues with the right people. Like, find people who are in fantasy football leagues with the right people. Like, I've got, you know, this could be infinite. I've got a source who's in a fantasy football league with, you know, Bernardo Silva. It's like, brilliant. Like, tell us who he's playing this weekend, you know? It's something wrong with this, really, isn't it? But it's a great story.
There's something kind of sweet about it as well, that they all have Jack Grealish in their team. I mean, it's the ultimate compliment. And when he scores a goal, you now know what they're all saying in the celebrations. Jack, beauty, I have you as captain. This is excellent. Let Jack take the penalty.
The fact they have to take action over this, though, kind of hints at a bigger point that, and I'm not saying that fantasy football is the root of all this, far from it, but it shows that by the fact that they have to take action from it, that it's a serious enough issue for Villa to deal with. But, and I know Dan can attest to this as well, because I'm sure he's seen it too. Fantasy football and gambling as a whole plays into a lot of the abuse that we see people suffer online. And like Dan will be able to tell you, of a Friday night when League of Ireland is ongoing, and say, like, picking two teams out of the side, say Galway and Shells have lost matches, you'll see random accounts from abroad giving them pelters because they've lost, because essentially they've cost them money. And similarly, you'll see players getting abused because if they haven't had a good game, then they may have cost either the person betting money, or they may have cost the person who's had them in their fantasy team and takes this extremely seriously. And there are those that do. It may have cost them points in their own particular league. So there's something to keep an eye out for in terms of both of those things, both gambling and fantasy football, in terms of how they correlate with people's abuse online, because they have been known to pretty much influence how people would react to certain players or certain individuals.
Well, it seems that was the main thrust behind the abuse aimed at Aaron Connolly when he missed that chance when Brighton were already 1-0 up and still won the game, but he missed the chance to go 2-0 up. And so a lot of people with money on or with fantasy football teams were not impressed with Aaron Connolly missing the chance. That was right, Dan, wasn't it? It certainly wasn't the Brighton faithful unhappy that they only beat Spurs 1-0.
No, I mean, when you think about it, and Richie is right, like, I mean, a betting example would be, for example, in the League of Ireland the last couple of years, Dundalk have been pretty dominant. Shamrock Rovers now, you know, last year, and you'd have loads of people who'd be betting on them to win games by a number of goals. So even if like Dundalk post a full time 1-0 win, there'll still be like a stream of people below going, you should have scored three, or you should have scored two, or whatever. Yeah. And that is obviously that is true. Like that is no doubt a massive part of the social media. And like, again, to go back to like journalists, you use social media a lot. Like, I might be at a game, I might want to search. Search a team name just for updates about them or something, and you really do see almost like the dark web of all the people that are following this stuff. But as with the fantasy football thing, yeah, there is obviously a more serious edge to it, but there is a sort of there's a sort of a comedic aspect to it in some degree. I assume lads can pick themselves. I mean, I assume there's no bar in it, right? I mean, if you register as Matt Target, there's nothing that stops you from putting Matt Target in your own team.
I wouldn't.
You know,
and like, there'd be no incentive to lose or play badly.
People are very competitive beings. You know, footballers are very competitive beings. Are they thinking, you know, I'll stick this corner towards the back post because like that defender's up for a corner and he's worth extra points if he sticks this one in the net here. You know, like, this is a whole new angle no one would have ever thought about. The real serious nature of what if it turns out that a player has and I haven't played fantasy football in a couple of years, but if a player has a player on an opposing team as their triple captain or their double captain or whatever it is.
You're overthinking this.
This is a scandal.
No.
Someone will think about this and make it a scandal. It's like the scandal of the player who had a shocking game and it's revealed something to do with their fantasy football team. Like, this is the new, this is where we go now. It's moved on from who's liking what and who's unfollowed who on Instagram. That's all news. Remember that there'd be a player feud because player A is unfollowed player B on Instagram. It's like, this is a shocker, you know, but now fantasy football, that's the new genre for it now. Get onto it.
The news round and off the ball on News Talk is with thanks to Gillette. We don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette made it what matters. Richie, you're starting with the Living with COVID roadmap, obviously impacts sport.
Oh yeah. Inter-county GAA teams said, Joe, have regained their elite status under the government's new Living with COVID roadmap. Elite status had been withdrawn from the inter-county scene by the government just earlier this month, but the new roadmap lists inter-county GAA alongside exemptions for level 3 and level 4 restrictions alongside other professional sport and horse racing. Club championships are covered by level 3 restrictions, but not level 4 and beyond. However, it would appear that no sport of any kind, even behind closed doors, is permitted under the redrawing of level 5 restrictions.
Dan, did you catch any Emile Martin? I was travelling in for a lot of it.
I've been watching it and following it. I mean, as Richie alludes to there, the document has left itself open to interpretation. Because it does have a line that says the current level 5 restrictions exist until April 5th, i.e., you know, what we now know to be level 5. And I think it's going to be addressed in this press conference that's ongoing at the moment. And probably even before 7:30, we'll probably get some clarity on it. So try and follow it to some degree. But yeah, it does, like GAA is coming in. Inter-county GAA is coming back in with, rugby and League of Ireland and racing under level 4. But it reads to me like that's what level 4 is going to be from April 5th. But what we have now will continue until April the 5th. The other alternative meaning of that is that all the race meetings and rugby and everything that's on this week is gone. So I don't think that makes sense. But if they've left themselves open to obviously people reading it that way. But listen, yeah, we've got it. GA is back in at elite status. We had that absolute, that just draining sort of thing of various inter-county managers lining up to have a pop over their elite status being withdrawn. When really the use of the word elite was problematic, and really it was to do with who's being paid or not, really.
Yeah.
And that was the issue. But I assume that will have to be cleared up. But it looks like, yeah, GA will be back from April the 5th. I'm open to correction on that. But everything that's meant to be level five and is allowed at the moment will be until April the 5th.
And what was the general tone of the speech?
The speech itself.
Well,
everything has been leaked so far, Joe. I don't know if we want to take the news round down this road too much, but like you're watching the speech going, yeah, I heard about that last night, I heard about that today.
Yeah.
You know, the suspense is removed from these speeches because there's so much stuff coming out. And listen, I'm a journalist. I feed off leaks. I probably can't complain about leaks too much, but there's probably a difference in a leak between, you know, someone joining a club or minutes of an FAI meeting even versus,
to be honest,
you know, something to do with public health and mental health at the time when everyone is really on their edge, I think that's a different story.
Yeah, no, I'm more asking less content and just the tone, as in, is the deal that the end is near, and we're going to get through this?
The hardest kind of stuff. That's what we're dealing with. I was watching a bit of it on the news, and it's all like the last mile is always the hardest. You know, we're going to roll out the vaccine to unprecedented numbers in this country when they're not really, essentially. But yeah, it's that kind of, come on now, one last push and we'll get over the hill here, as if he's kind
Fitzcarraldo pulling
over the mountain.
In fairness, that is better than saying, actually, this thing's not in a great place. We could be in for a really long haul here. I mean, because I tuned in, I just caught the end bit, and he was talking about 85% of people, the first vaccinations by June, and a fairly healthy quotient, I think well over 50% fully vaccinated by the end of June. And I thought, okay, that's something, you know, considering where they are thus far in the vaccination. They did, 350,000 in the last month. They're looking to do a million in the next month. It just struck me with that limited glimpse of it I caught as seemingly a touch more optimistic than this is really serious, the variant is really serious, and look, we could be living with this for a long time type thing.
Yeah, but I don't know. I think that the communication of messages in the last 24 hours about, we've had various previous statements about vaccines and whatnot, and then, you know, it changes from week to week. So I don't know. I'm not sure if there was a huge amount of optimism for people to take from the tone.
Oh, was there not? Okay.
But even more so, I think people are, this document, I think this is important. Like, I know people watch the speech, but obviously the small print is produced, and like people are reading through it. And I mean, again, I'm thinking of people that might be listening to like a sports show. I don't see much information there around the likes of, say, even golf and tennis and those type of pursuits. Maybe it is there, but I don't see people sort of like we're already into a sort of a debate over what are they saying about level 4 and 5? What does this all mean? I just even follow on social media and people involved in various levels of sport who don't know when they're going to come back, because of course, you know, we talk about sport primarily in the context of, say, sports that we cover, but obviously for a lot of people who play organized sports, say at amateur level, and not just in GEA but also in other sports, like they don't know when their teams are going to resume. And I don't think, like, I understand the logic behind, I suppose, not putting dates in a plan. I can see the thinking behind it, but without any dates, then of course it's hard to have hope and something to aim towards, really.
It's not even dates. You want markers more than anything else. You can live without, you know, we're going to be here by, like Johnson did yesterday in the UK, we're going to be here by May 17th and then here by June 16th. What you'd want is by a certain number, or once we have the virus under a certain level in terms of infections per day or death rate.
I think we have that, though. No, I thought we got that.
There's been discussion on it, but...
Are you sure?
There's no certainty.
Okay. Look, I need to watch the full speech, but I did hear somebody saying afterwards, I'm not even sure which channel it was coming in, but they were saying that we now know that some of the markers, it'll be based on hospital admissions and it'll be based on the infection rate, that they were the markers they're going to use. So maybe there's more detail there than we all feel at 7:10, you know?
I think the press conference early question, the first question at the press conference was about benchmarks. What are the benchmarks?
Okay.
So benchmarks aren't clearly defined in print.
Okay.
If that was the first question, that to get again, if the various characters, Martin and Vradker and Roland, had been asked to, say what the markers might be, but I don't think they're going to commit to a firm one, unless as ever with these things, like the communications has been such a mess.
Yeah, it's been terrible.
You have a briefing and then you have a press conference where maybe someone throws out a line that might actually shine a light on something that isn't that clear in the document, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So I suspect across the show, even come 9 o'clock or whatever, we might have a bit more meat on the bone of aspects of it.
Okay. Well, look, the communication over the past 10 days has been an embarrassment. There's no two ways about it. So hopefully they get today right. There is football tonight in the Premier League, Rich, as well as Champions League.
Yeah, one game in the Premier League kicked off at 6 o'clock. So into the second half now at Allen Road, where it's Leeds 1, Southampton 0. Patrick Bamford has put Leeds in front there. 8 p.m. starts to both of tonight's last 16 first legs in the Champions League. Due to travel restrictions, Chelsea's away leg with Atletico Madrid is being played in Bucharest. Chelsea line out with Edouard Mendy in goal, a back three of Cesar Azpilicueta, Andreas Christensen and Antonio Rudiger. Callum Hudson-Odoi is on the right-hand side of a midfield four with Jorginho and Mateo Kovacic in the middle. Marcus Alonso is on the left, and then Mason Mount and Timo Werner are in support of Olivier Giroud. For Atleti, it looks like a 4-2-2 with Jan Oblak in goal. Marcus Llorente, Stefan Savic, Felipe and Mario Hermoso as their back four. Angel Correa, Koke, Saul Niguez and Thomas Lamar are in midfield. And then João Felix and Luis Suarez are up front. Meanwhile, the Stadio Olimpico hosts the meeting of Lazio and holders Bayern Munich.
Okay, got Miguel Delaney with us this hour. Johnny Sexton talking today, Richie.
Yeah, he concedes that he may not be around for the next World Cup in France in 2023. The Ireland captain is set to return to action against Italy this weekend, having been forced to sit out the defeat to France. The 35-year-old is on the verge of agreeing what's believed to be a new one-year deal with Leinster, and Sexton is already planning for life after rugby, and it won't involve coaching or spending his Saturdays next to you, Joe.
I have a fair idea what I'll be doing. You never tell anyone your plans because they can change, can't they? I've got some things that I'll work towards over the next, whether it's a year or 2 years, I don't know. I'll work towards getting into the real world and starting another life. I think there's some parts of this game that are amazing, that you love and you'd love to be a part of it forever. But then there's some parts that you just can't wait to get a million miles away from it. I love it at the moment. I'm loving every moment of playing, and I just want to focus on this campaign. And then if I stay on next year, just focus on that and try and make the most of whatever's left.
That's pretty interesting. So he said it wouldn't be coaching, Richie.
It won't be coaching. He was asked, are you going to go into coaching? Are you going to go into punditry? And he said, none of the above.
Ah.
So he's clearly looking for, the business world, probably akin to what Jamie Heaslip has lent more on outside of his punditry work in the last while. So not coaching and not punditry. He's going to be looking into the real world, as he put it. But he lent a lot there in that press conference, at least three times, on the fact, obviously you mentioned that the most noticeable thing is him saying that he won't be around. He doesn't know if he'll be around for the 2023 Rugby World Cup. But the fact that he kept saying 1 year, 2 year, it seems like it's going to be a 1 year deal. So you would speculate that maybe he isn't actually going to be around for the 2023 World Cup, but is determined to keep on playing regardless of where he ends up.
Yeah, I suspect he's just doing 1 year at a time. No point planning beyond that. Equally, there's no point coming out saying, I am going to be involved in the World Cup in 2023, because then he gets asked about it every few minutes. Every press conference, it's a case of, are you going to be involved in the 2023 World Cup? Do you still think you're going to be involved in the 2023 World Cup? And it just becomes a rod to beat himself with. So I think that's the smart way to do it. You just say, I'm going to take each year at a time, 1 year at a time. That makes sense. But the coaching thing, I'm a bit surprised at, because with his rugby intellect, he was generally regarded as coach in waiting, coach on the field, somebody who could do very, very well in that sphere. I guess, as he says himself there, Dan, there are aspects of the professional game he wants to get a million miles away from. I suspect media scrutiny and pressure and all that stuff might be what he's talking about, hence no coaching.
Yeah, I mean, there's always an attempt to predict, like, predicting who will thrive or even want to do that. It's always difficult, isn't it? I mean, it translates from code to code. I mean, there's always an assumption. Like, you know, sort of veer more towards the football world, but you have the more sort of enigmatic characters. You wouldn't have thought that the likes of Joey Barton and Lee Bowyer would have been viewed as, like, you know, people who'd go into the managerial sphere or whatever, and they did. But I can understand it. Like, I mean, listen, as someone who sort of, you know, sort of consumes rugby very much from the outside, but Sexton is such a central figure. Like, every week there's an analysis of his situation, and for a variety of reasons, as we know. And I'd imagine that's pretty draining over a long period of time. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is, I suppose, like, it's going to be interesting to see for the professional rugby generation of players. I suppose they've earned reasonably well because they've been there when, you know, the money has gone up. But obviously, you know, a lot of footballers can leave it now and go away because they've all their money made and they've retired. They don't need to work again, really, as much as anything. Mm. They've looked after things. I'm not sure if the rugby lads have made that much that they still don't need to do something.
I think Johnny Sexton would be as well set as anyone, but I mean, I still
would have thought
so. I don't know how set that would be. And obviously, look, he can't just sit around and do nothing for the next 30, 40 years. He's too driven and probably has too high a standard for himself. On the attention he gets, it's true, you know, so you as a casual consumer of rugby know that Sexton seems to be talked about all the time. It's even at these times where I feel, geez, we talk about Sexton too much, and yet he's so central, and at the moment, whether he plays or doesn't play or continues to play or how he's playing at his age is so central to how Ireland are going and how Leinster are going, it's kind of hard to talk about either team without talking a lot about him. So, but I suspect he is sick of the scrutiny the last couple of years. Be interesting in a couple of years' time when he's retired and out of it to sit down and ask him, was this, you know, this final chapter, this kind of winter period of your career, was it unenjoyable because there was just so much talk about you and where you were? It's hard to know. As for the punditry thing, well, I mean, there's a long line, I would say, no, definitely, shoot me if I'm a pundit, shoot me. And then, of course, look, it's an easy,
good 18 months.
Easy enough way to make a few quid as well and get off the couch.
It's hard for them as well. They have a great structure in their lives, and I think they miss the structure when it's gone. So that's why the view changes as much as financial or involvement reasons. I think it's like all of a sudden there's a big void and they have to fill it somehow. And listen, they're going to have offers, and eventually you decide to answer that email or answer that phone call, don't you?
Yeah.
You've got something to do. And to spend more time with John Molloy, of course, which is something that every ex-rugby player gets to do.
Dreams of. Who are the most... Roy Keane is one, obviously. I will never be a pundit. Roy Keane is one. I think Duffer's in there. I don't think Duffer had it on his cards.
No, I think they are the two outstanding ones. I mean, Duffer would run through a mix zone, you know, like at times. And even a Duff interview was a rarity. But it's funny, like sometimes it's been said to me that Glenn Whelan would be a great pundit.
Really?
And he's someone who didn't do an interview with Irish media for years.
Yeah.
But then he did, I think maybe as a retirement press conference as such, it was when Martin O'Neill tried to retire in press conference. We hadn't heard from him in years, and he spoke really well.
Right.
And sometimes keeping yourself out of the media during your career makes you a lot more interesting when you're out of it. There is definitely something in that.
Rich, they're all COVID-free is the great news.
Yeah. Earlier today, the IRFU confirming the entire squad and backroom team remains free of coronavirus ahead of that trip to Rome. Meanwhile, the latest round of PCR testing in the France squad has returned no new positives. Six Nations organisers will decide tomorrow if Sunday's game with Scotland can still go ahead. The French Rugby Federation and namely Vice President Sir Simon are adamant that they won't be seeking a postponement. They say they're fit and healthy and raring to go for Sunday's game in Paris.
Hi lads, my son's a very talented young swimmer. He's been out of the pool for the guts of a year now. Very frustrated, at least with rugby, soccer, you can kick a ball around the park. But with swimming, the pool is the only place a swimmer can hone their skills. Spare a thought for athletes in minority sports, says Michael. Yeah, sparing a thought for lots of people, Michael. It is not easy for sure. Well, I don't know. I don't know how far away you are from the sea, but hopefully the travel restrictions open up soon enough and maybe you can get out for the odd swim somewhere in the sea. But yeah, look, I take the point. It's a really tough time. Now, just what the football world wanted.
Yeah. Boxing promoters MTK Global have confirmed a move into the World of Football agency. The operation will be led by the 36-year-old agent Danny Vincent. No further details regarding clients and where they will be operating have been revealed. MTK founded, of course, in 2012 by Daniel Kinahan, who's since publicly severed ties with the operation, but recently himself admitted he is still advising boxers.
It'll be interesting, Dan, to see what part of the world they try and get a footprint in first. But certainly the UK, maybe if this was 4, 5, 6 months ago, it wouldn't have caused much of a ripple. But post-Panorama over there, this will certainly be noted and discussed, you would suspect, by the football media.
Yeah, I would have thought so. I don't want to make assumptions on this. I would think, I mean, it's more likely though that it's the UK where they would look, because there's, as much as there's been scrutiny from the UK media, there's obviously been a fair bit of apology in aspects of it as well. You know, sort of talk sport statements and whatnot. So they might be more ripe to go in that world. I'm not sure, although you can never be sure with these things and be complacent about it. But I think, for example, young Irish footballers who maybe thought about going that route, I think they'd have a lot of scrutiny on them, more than they would like, I think. Whereas maybe players in the UK, maybe not so much.
Okay. Rich, bad news for Adam Byrne.
Yeah, the Leinster winger is set for a further lengthy spell on the sidelines. He required surgery on a quad tear this week, having only recently stepped up his recovery from a hamstring injury, while Tommy O'Brien sustained a hamstring injury en route back from an ankle problem. But Jimmy O'Brien could be in contention for the Pro 14 visit of Glasgow this weekend, having recovered from a hamstring problem. St. Pat's continue to build for the new season. West Ham youngster Alfie Lewis joins on loan until the end of June, while Stephen O'Donnell has also snapped up former Dundalk defender Paddy Barrett, who was most recently plying his trade in Cambodia.
Okay. Golf news.
Yeah, a limited number of fans are going to return for golf's PGA Championship in South Carolina. 10,000 supporters will be allowed into the event at Kiawah Island in May. It's the second time the tournament has been played at the venue, with Rory McIlroy winning in 2012 for his second major. Augusta Chiefs are also hoping to host a limited number of spectators for the Masters in April. Fans have been trickling back in America in recent weeks. 5,000 a day are allowed into the Waste Management Phoenix Open.
And Gordon McQueen always came across as such a lovely man. Really sad news.
Yeah, the former Manchester United, Leeds and Scotland defender has been diagnosed with vascular dementia. His family has released a statement today saying they've chosen to tell people, as raising awareness may help others in similar situations. They go on to say how McQueen wants footballers of today's generation to know that there may be risks with persistent heading of the ball. The news comes after his former teammate Jack Charlton and the 1966 World Cup winner Nobby Stiles died last year with the condition.
Yeah, I saw the family statement, Dan, and they were just making the point, you know, he scored lots of memorable goals with his head, but also every day in training he'd stay back and practice his heading and head the ball to the goalkeepers, and they were certainly drawing that link, and it's not the first time the link has been drawn, and nor the last.
No, I heard Kevin Doyle speak in similar terms recently as well, and now unfortunately it's just one, you know, it's one sad story after the next in this, but I suppose it is a recurring theme as such, is that it is, like, training contact is as important as anything that happens in a match. It's the repetition of head use. So, you know, you would hope that raises awareness about it going forward. But of course, that, you know, that seed has been planted for so many people who've played since this became a proper discussion. So, it feels like we're going to hear more of these stories. So sadly.
Yeah. Listen, we'll talk again on the Football Show after 9. Dan, thanks very much. Richie, as ever, thanks a mil.
Cheers, Joe.
We will take a short break. We have Emer O'Neill on the way between 8 and 9, an interview well worth sticking around for. And up next, Champions League evening, we have Miguel Delaney.
The News Round on Off the Ball.
With Gillette. We don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters.